The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. I'm Taylor Payne and we're dispensing with the formalities today because this is a little bonus episode. We'll reflect on the transfer deadline day in a little while, but first.
Trippier. Right for Longstaff, what a moment for Isak. Announcing the arrival of Alexander Isak. Tape sorted out, red defenders in his wake, Liverpool 0, Newcastle 1. What a chance for 2-0, what a debut this is proving to be, but the offside flag denies him his second goal.
Oh, fine margins again, just off the back of Joe Gomez, Liverpool get lucky.
Oh, yes, indeed, Alexander, Isak, George and Chris, it's nice to be back. How the devil are the two of you? Are you all right, George?
Yeah.
You had a bit of trouble last week, didn't you?
I'm all right, did I?
Yeah.
What?
I heard the last 30 seconds of the podcast, don't worry.
Oh, yeah, well, look, we missed you, Taylor, we did miss you. It gives me some pain to say that. Anyway, how are you? Yeah, we're all right. How are you doing?
I'm all right, yeah, I'm recovering. I'm delurgified, if that's even a word.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that. It's Chris that I'm really worried about, because I got a couple of SOSs from him on his way to Anfield this week, and I worried slightly. Firstly, it was, I can't find my hotel, so it's like,
standard,
right. Chris. So there was a bit of that. We had to talk him through Google Maps, and for some reason he had to check in somewhere that his hotel wasn't. I didn't understand. And then I got another plaintive message from him. I've just squirted deodorant into my own face. So I hopefully Chris has recovered from that. You all right, Chris?
Oh, true stories, but now today is one of my two favourite days of the year, and that's the day after transfer deadline day. So that's so I'm feeling better because of that.
Yeah, it's like Christmas, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Yes, it really is, except with any of the joy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Chris has done in particular has done an absolutely fantastic job covering the ins and outs of the window over the summer, so big well done to Chris. Very proud of you.
Absolutely, Chris. Well, shall we crack on, chaps?
Let's do it.
We've got a little bit to get through in this little extra bonus episode. Let's start with the big story, eh? Alexander Isak wowed us on his debut at Anfield. A club record signing, Chris, and a real statement from Newcastle United.
It was, and I mean, in terms of that performance, what a way to introduce yourself to the Premier League and, more importantly, to Newcastle United and Newcastle United fans. I mean, he was excellent. Certainly during the first half. It turned out afterwards he'd actually picked up a bit of a dead leg during the first half as well. And then, I mean, his first, the way he takes, the way that he presses the ball, his pace, he really unsettled Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk, the way that he was harrying them. And then the way that he finished that goal was just absolute aplomb. A brilliant ball from Sean Longstaff. What a confident finish.
The way he finished both goals, Chris. Both goals.
Yes, absolutely. It was an instinctive finish, wasn't it? It was just the first time, didn't have to touch and set himself or anything. Just let the ball run across him and bang. And right in the roof of the net as well. And he's a very confident young man, isn't he?
He is, and for that one-touch finish, that's something Alan Shearer in an article on The Athletic looking at Isak before the game had sort of said that he loves a sort of one-touch finish. That's the way he likes to finish it. And so my job on Wednesday, essentially, is I watched Isak for the entire time he was on the pitch and exactly what he did and what he brought. And it was fascinating to see. And he has brought a different element to Newcastle. The fact that he's like this tall, rangy striker, 6'3", 6'4", but he's not like massively built. He's sort of gangly in many ways, but he's very quick off the mark. He's very tactically aware. There was times where he was sort of shouting at both Almiron and Fraser because they weren't pressing as he wanted to press, and you can see what he's sort of bringing to the team in that sense. And so yeah, it was what an introduction, and hopefully more to come at St James's Park this weekend.
A very modern forward is what you describe that as, I think, wouldn't you, Chris? It's sort of, yes, he does have that physicality in terms of his height, but he's just comfortable on the ball, comfortable tactically, fluid, can play kind of across the front three. And yeah, no, but just so incredibly encouraging and brilliant that he's off the mark straight away, takes a lot of the pressure off. But part of a overall, part of a really good performance there.
It was a shame that the second goal was ruled out for offside, because it would have been one of the great debut goals, wouldn't it, if he'd managed to notch that. The way he danced around those two defenders as if they weren't there and left them on their arses. I mean, these are good, solid Premier League players that he's going past like that. And the confidence that he showed and the touch and the deftness of foot was just beautiful, wasn't it, George? It was like, oh my God, this boy's got something.
Yeah, exactly. Has a bit of everything, and you know, I'm sure we will discuss some of the sort of controversy about the match. But just, you know, you want your signings, your new signings, to settle in as quickly as possible. And he played as if he'd always been there. I mean, that was the, you know, you sort of wonder how will he cope at Anfield? How will he cope against arguably the best centre half in the world? Will he get knocked about a bit? And it was like he's always been there. It was the opposite. He caused them problems. So just very encouraging for the future, but also, you know, also for now too.
A few surprises with the starting lineup as well, Chris. This week it was an interesting starting 11. Obviously, Eddie Howe's hampered massively by injuries and we're missing some of our key players. But there was a few other changes that I think people weren't quite expecting as well.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of those ones who were missing, Newcastle were really without three of the best players. They're three best players. Bruno Guimaraes wasn't there in midfield. No Alan Saint-Maximin and no Callum Wilson. And yet they still managed to put in the performance that they did. But the big calls that Eddie Howe made before the game, which I think on social media at least there was quite a lot of controversy about, was Jamal Lascelles was brought in along to partner Dan Burn at centre-back, and Fabian Scher and Sven Botman were rested to the bench. But I thought that the both of them, Burn in particular, but I thought both of them, him and Lascelles, played very, very well. I thought they were very unfortunate. I know you can the ins and outs of Liverpool's winning goal you can bring in, but I think that Howe made the call and actually it worked for a large part. I thought defensively the team was excellent.
No Wilson, no Saint-Maximin, no Bruno, and to go to Anfield to perform like that, I just think is so encouraging. I mean, I feel like there's still something missing from my personality at the minute, because although, you know, my initial reaction to losing in that way was one of sort of, you know, great annoyance and irritation and frustration and all that, but really pretty soon after that, I'd kind of calmed down and just feel that sort of sense of pride that Newcastle are going, and positivity that Newcastle are going to Anfield and putting in a performance like that. Yes, of course, they're hanging on at the end, as you would expect, against, you know, a world-class football team in a brilliant, raw stadium. And they're giving everybody a game at the moment. And it doesn't matter whether players come out. In the past, losing one of Wilson, Saint-Maximin, or Bruno, if he'd been at the club, would have been seen as terminal. But Newcastle are finding a way, not just to cause other teams problems in terms of how to get past them, but causing them offensive problems as well. And so, again, my reaction to that defeat was just one of great encouragement that they are now already in a position where they're being competitive and finding a way to compete. So perhaps, Taylor, maybe I should come on to you. Maybe we should reverse this a little bit, because what I would still like a good old-fashioned grumpy rant about what happened at Anfield. I feel too positive. I don't know what's wrong with them. I still don't know. But come on, you know, let's have a defence of Eddie's time-wasting shit-housing mags, please. Come on.
I'll be honest. When the final whistle went and after they scored that second goal, I was just completely deflated. It took me a little while to get my head around the fact that actually we'd gone there and we'd played well. And I think it wasn't until probably midday, the day after the game, that I started to think, you know, we did really well there and the team have fought really hard, because I was so wound up about the way that Jurgen Klopp went on and the way his players went on after the game. And honestly, to quote our great friend Kevin Keegan, I would have loved it if we beat them that day. Honestly, I understand I kind of get on board with the time-wasting thing because we did slow the game down an awful lot. There was players going down injured and there was players rolling over left, right and centre. Joe Linton kicking the ball away twice. Jacob Murphy kicked the ball away. I totally get that. I don't for the life of me understand where the extra time came from. I cannot get my head around why there was nearly 98 minutes played. Now, I know people have gone into the minutiae of this and they've started looking at timings and why Nick Pope sat down for 90 seconds and then the ball went out for a goal kick and all that. Absolute bullshit. I know it's a minimum of 95 minutes that they play, but to score nearly 98 minutes in injury time, it just felt like it was nailed on and that they were going to play for as long as it took. It frustrates me so much.
No, I mean, I'm very much enjoying the rant. I just want to first of all, I think I was surprised that you only gave 5 minutes to begin with. To be honest, I thought the fourth official would give more because Liverpool making such a thing about the tactics. But that's by the by. He didn't. He gave 5 minutes. But there had been a lot made about the fact that when Newcastle broke and Joe Linton crossed the ball in, and Eddie Howe was asked about this morning at his press conference, and it was interesting because Howe was basically like, I'm not going to criticise any of my players for trying to want to win a game.
Yeah.
He said that's the mentality I want in them. And actually, more of an issue for me is, you might not have seen this on the TV, but I was watching Andre Mariner just before Liverpool won the corner. Newcastle actually had the ball just outside their own box and gave it away to Liverpool. And Mariner looked like he was just about to put the whistle to his mouth. Liverpool immediately won, shot straight away, and then he pointed to the corner. So that was actually more of an issue, Newcastle managing it there. They gave the ball away, and they did that a couple of times before that. There was a couple of stray clearances where they hadn't got rid of the ball. And Howe admitted this morning that he was disappointed with the last 2 minutes. He was so happy with the first 95.
Yeah.
But as well as the added minutes being there anyway, Newcastle sort of lost their way a little bit. They lost that shape that they had before.
I don't want players running in the corner at 1-1. I'm sorry, but I don't. If you've got a chance to score a goal, you go for it. And the cross that Joe Linton put in was absolutely wonderful as well, and if Anderson rattles it in the top corner, you know, it's a different story.
Yeah,
but I haven't got a problem with that.
I think there's two things to say about that though, Taylor, because if you are slowing the game down, which Eddie Howe admitted that they were, there has to be that bit of game management as well. And on the BT commentary, the commentator said, oh, here comes Joe Linton almost certainly taking the ball into the corner at this point. I mean, you know, I think that's a sort of, you know, if you have been trying to slow it down at that point, do you not just accept what you've got? I mean, I love the idea of going all out for a win, but I'm not sure that was in keeping with sort of everything else that happened. I mean, I would also say about Klopp, I mean, I love Klopp. I love what he's done for Liverpool as a neutral. One of the things I liked, actually, I mean, he was going completely mental on the touchline. From a Newcastle perspective, I didn't like that. But I did like the fact that both benches were going at each other and
throwing water bottles around and all sorts.
I'm pretty sure Liverpool fans would probably say something similar about Jason Tindall, you know, but I love the kind of pantomime of that.
Mm.
But really what I loved was that Newcastle was so under Liverpool's skin.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were at Anfield, as Chris said, not just going there and lying down, not just playing for a narrow defeat, not just playing, getting everybody behind the ball. I know by the end they didn't have very much possession because of Liverpool tearing at them, but this was a very different Newcastle. It was Newcastle trying to sort of set the tone, set the agenda their way. It doesn't have to be Liverpool's way. And so all of that, you know, all of that stuff at the end, it was kind of very messy and it was very frustrating and very annoying, but I loved it.
One of the things I found bizarre, and I haven't really seen it in a away ground other than when Newcastle have played Sunderland and possibly Middlesbrough, was that Newcastle were booed off. And that was Howe said after the game that he took it almost as a compliment. He said, I wouldn't want to be applauded off by the opposition. But it was really, really odd because it was the majority of Liverpool fans who were still there, or a significant proportion. It wasn't just a few fans. Like, Newcastle were properly booed down the tunnel. Anfield was rattled, and it was rattled throughout the game because Newcastle did frustrate them and really did upset them.
What do they want? What do they want? Do they want us to turn up in a nice side part and in a cardigan and go, there you go, there's 9 goals? Like Scott Parker did the week before. It's not going to happen, is it? You can boo all you want. Jesus, honestly.
Come on, you shithouses. It annoys me so much, Eddie, shithouses.
It's like, what do you want? Like, what's the... If they'd gone away to Man United or Man City and done that exact same thing, they wouldn't have been bothered. I'll tell you another thing as well. If it wasn't for the 5 substitutes rule, we would have won that game, or we at least would have got a point. If it'd been 3 subs for each team, we would have got a point. I'm telling you now. Definitely. Arseholes. Right. Anything else to add before we move on, chaps?
I don't think so.
Okay. Don't forget, listeners, you can subscribe to The Athletic at the special price of just £1 a month for the first 6 months. To claim that offer, go to theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod and get access to all of our great writing, as well as ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod. Sign up now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right then, chaps, a quiet deadline day for Newcastle United. Not as drastic as this time last year, but we were hoping for at least one loan. George, the top clubs, they seem to be quite reluctant to give us loan deals at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Chris and I have written about in our big piece inside the transfer window, which is up on The Athletic for people to have a look at. And that was one thing that people we spoke to at the top of the club said, that in spite of the fact that Newcastle actually do have pretty decent relationships with some of the bigger clubs. You know, we saw Amanda Staveley and Mehrdad Gudusi at the Chelsea game recently. That those clubs are seeing Newcastle as a threat, as a potential rival, as a potential competitor. Now, I'm not saying that means necessarily this season, but this season and beyond. And so, you know, they did try to get Chelsea players. They did look at Ainsley Maitland-Niles, for example. And I find that kind of very interesting that you know, Arsenal were prepared to let Maitland-Niles go to Southampton, but not to Newcastle. And again, that might be disappointing for us in the short term, but if you can take a step back from that and look at it a bit longer term, I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty remarkable and quite encouraging. And Eddie Howe was asked about that, Chris, wasn't he, at his press conference before the Crystal Palace game?
He was, yeah, and he said, he was asked basically, did Newcastle find it difficult to get domestic clubs to deal with them? And he said, that's true, I would say so. That was definitely something we felt in the market. Domestic clubs didn't want to be seen to be helping us. We'll have to take that. That is part of where we are at the moment. And later on, he basically said that anything domestically, teams will put the price up if it's Newcastle. He says that's the case around the world, but it's even more so domestically, and they basically walked away from deals because of it. And that is the, we've talked about it before, the so-called Newcastle tax, Saudi tax, whatever you want to refer to it as. That is even more pronounced, I think, in the Premier League at the moment with quite a few of the deals Newcastle have tried to do this summer.
It's interesting, isn't it? The window is... some people are still looking at the window in a fairly negative light and saying that we've left ourselves short in certain areas, but they have stretched to buy Alexander Isak, haven't they, George? And obviously Yasser Al-Rumayyan was at the game, the City game, when Callum Wilson got injured, and they've made a statement. They've gone out and they've spent a record transfer fee.
Yeah, and again, that was something that that we've spoken about for this piece. I mean, I thought that was very interesting that the chairman was there. Callum Wilson comes off injured. They've, you know, it's a great game, great performance, and the feeling was that Al-Rumayyan said, you know, he wanted to quote do something big that would bring some positivity to the team. Mm. They spoke after that game. The transfer committee, the decision was unanimous that they would go after Isak, who had been top of the list. Earlier on in the year, at the start of the window, a bit before, it looked like he was out of their league, certainly in terms of finances. And, you know, possibly at that stage, he might have had a bit of reluctance to join Newcastle. But one of the things about Newcastle is that they're very, very persistent. They're persistent in selling their story. They've been persistent in playing well and winning. And whether you look at people like Sven Botman, Bruno, Isak fits that same category of player who isn't going to be paid an absolute fortune at Newcastle in relative terms, you know, compared to the top six, isn't going to be in Europe, certainly this season, but selling the big idea of what the club is trying to do. And they went after him, and that did involve a changing of tack, a changing of direction because of the Wilson injury. We'd spoken to people not long before that, and the idea at that stage was probably bring in two permanent signings, a forward, a young forward, you would say, and possibly a midfielder as well. And then in the end, going all in on Isak meant that they, although they kept looking, particularly for loans, it made it more difficult to do it. But I think we've talked about Isak as a player and why that's very encouraging. It's also very encouraging that there was that fluidity, that because one, you know, that they were able to react to an event and change where they looked at next. And in fact, that's the story of what's happened throughout the summer, that I think Eddie Howe talked about, you start the window with one plan and you end up with another. And that's just the way it goes sometimes. There was none of that sort of religious, rigorous, we've got one idea, we've got one player and we stick to it. And if it doesn't work, that's the end of it. They switched things around.
Yeah. Chris, is there a feeling that Newcastle have been left slightly short across the middle of the pitch? I mean, obviously we've got injuries in there. John Joel Shelvey, Bruno's missed a few games. And obviously it's provided opportunities for the likes of Elliot Anderson and Sean Longstaff. But is there a feeling that Newcastle might still be a bit light across there?
Yeah, I mean, we said at the start of the window, Newcastle were going to try and sign between four and six players. They got four in the end. We know the two positions that they missed out on were they wanted another wide forward, ideally. Eddie Howe wanted someone else in that position. And also, by the end of the window, once John Joe Shelvey had been ruled out for 3 months, midfield had become a bit more of a priority because although they have those players you mentioned, that they do, Eddie Howe does play with three midfielders, and yeah. You just have to look across the Premier League. I asked Howe about this morning, the number of injuries clubs are having in midfield at the moment because of the number of games and also how intensely Newcastle are playing. You just have to think of the ground that Joe Linton and Joe Willock have covered over the last few games and absolutely. Think about how their bodies must be sort of stretched and that they must probably be on the edge of nearly being on that danger zone that it's sometimes called in terms of getting an injury. And so midfield was what they looked for in the last couple of days of the window. They were pushing, looked at several different things. Yuri Tillemans came back up in conversation. The Douglas Luiz, George mentioned Andy Maitland-Niles earlier in the week. They also, Conor Gallagher, they still had an interest in. Leander Dondonka at Wolves. These are all players who Newcastle at least considered in some sort of capacity. And for whatever reason, they decided against doing deals or couldn't get them done. And so, yeah, I think Howe ideally would have liked another midfielder there because Shelvey is now likely to be in the squad. It hasn't been announced at this moment in time, but he isn't going to be available for most of the first half of the season.
Everything that Chris says is totally right. They looked at all those players. What I would say is that, you know, what that now does is it does provide an opportunity for the people who are still there. And, you know, as mentioned at the start, but, you know, if Sean Longstaff plays like he played at Anfield, then Newcastle, you know, have a really, really good player there. Now, I know Sean gets stick sometimes, but not only for the pass for the goal, but his all-round performance was excellent. Elliot Anderson, at the end of last season, Howe obviously wanted to have a look at him, but I think the likelihood at that point of him going from League Two to the Premier League was unlikely. However, the impact he's made, firstly in training, then pre-season, then in those cameos we've seen him play, so encouraging. So that's a player that arguably Newcastle didn't expect to have in their first team squad a few months ago. That's very encouraging too. And I'm chuffed to bits that pathway is going to stay open for him. And so what now they have to do is they have to be able to do that on a consistent basis. One of the great stories post Eddie Howe's arrival has been how everybody has raised their game and been encouraged by the players who've come in. They now will have a chance to do the same thing.
And there has been some outgoings as well, Chris, haven't there? Probably the biggest outgoing has been Martin Dubravka, who maybe a little bit too keen to go and play 4 Europa League games for Man United. It's a funny one, that, isn't it? Because he doesn't seem prepared to sit on the bench at Newcastle behind Nick Pope, but he seems quite happy to go and sit on the bench at Man United. What's the story there?
This one seems to have split Newcastle fans, and I know some are very frustrated about the fact that he's gone. I know others wish him well. I certainly wish him well, because he's been excellent for Newcastle United since he's been at them. I think this is one where Eddie Howe maybe misjudged a little bit how I think it would affect Dubravka to be dropped. I think he didn't realise, because Howe himself has said quite a few times he wanted to keep Dubravka, and he didn't want to lose him, but Dubravka was keen to go once Manchester United came in for him. And I know that some people are saying, well, why would you choose to be number two somewhere else? First of all, there is the Manchester United factor, as frustrating as some people may hear from that. Manchester United, to someone who grew up in Slovakia, I'm sure is a huge draw. Second of all, he is likely to play a bit more there with them being the Europa League. And also, I do think it is different to change from being number one and be dropped to be number two, to go in somewhere to be number two. I think that change in squad status is something which Dubravka has struggled to deal with mentally. Yeah. I don't think he wants to be in that position, having been demoted almost. To go somewhere else and know you are number two is slightly different. So that's where I think all of this has come about. I think his nose was put out of joint by Pope usurping him into the team. And that's maybe one where Howe probably didn't necessarily see what was going to come from that and would have ideally liked to keep him, but Dubravka himself was keen to go elsewhere.
It's a shame to see him go, George, isn't it? He's been a big name for Newcastle, and he's put in some stellar performances over the years as well. And it's, you know, our paths may cross again. It is a loan deal, but you never know. It could be the end for Martin Dubravka and Newcastle United.
Yeah, you know, want to pay tribute to him. He's been an excellent servant. I mean, you know, just go back to when Nick Pope signed. I think a few of us scratched our heads a little bit. It's like, 20 million quid spending on a keeper is, but Pope has proved to be a big upgrade. There was no easy way back for Dubravka. I think Chris's reading of that is right. I don't have any mixed feelings. I wish him well, and the same goes to the other players who've left this summer. Yeah. I have to say, you know, a big thank you to Federico Fernandez, who went on transfer deadline day. Again, he's been someone who's been very important.
But then
brilliant pro. And you look at, you know, you look at all the players who've gone during the window: Matty Longstaff, Isaac Hayden, Dwight Gayle, Kieran Clark. There's a big shift there. And getting rid, that isn't the right phrase. You know, moving those players on, giving them an opportunity to go somewhere else and play is A, very important and good for them. It's also really important for the squad to be recycling those players eventually, and also just not to have them hanging around anymore. So, you know, in the event Newcastle have been left with a 26 players for a 25-man squad, we know that Shelby's injured, we know that Cher is injured at the minute, Elliot Anderson doesn't count because he's under 21. That's now a tight squad. There's not going to be a disaffected rump. You know, the players who were left out in January, to give them credit, were all seen as being very, very professional and trained with the first team squad. That kind of situation can't last forever and be healthy. So I think they've done very well to get players out the door too.
Absolutely. Trimming the fat off the squad has been something which has been a bit of a problem for Newcastle, hasn't it, Chris? And Dan Ashworth, since coming in, seems to have a very sort of focused way of doing this. And he's managed to get some of those names out of that squad to reduce the numbers a bit. And you have to say, it's the first time in a while I've thought, actually, we've done a pretty good job of moving players on.
They did. And I mean, they didn't actually get any money really for most of them. And they are paying significant portions of the wages of a large part of them, but equally you don't want those players necessarily to be around, just because to have too many numbers around, often be training within the 23s or unhappy because they're not playing. That was something they had to do in the second half of last season with the likes of Kieran Clark and Jamal Lewis, but instead Lewis has been reintegrated in the squad, and that is fascinating of its own accord. And pre-season he was seen as, at the start of it, he was going to be given opportunity, and he came back flying was one of the words that someone used to me to describe how he was. And then unfortunately he's been struck by injuries again. So Newcastle have this 25-man squad between now and January, and then I'm sure they're going to try and strengthen further. Then, as I've said already, with the likes of Pedro, possibly someone like Madison, Harrison's going to be in the final 18 months of his deal if he doesn't sign a new contract. These are players Newcastle like and will probably still be tracking and looking to maybe strengthen those, some of those positions we think they're still a little bit short.
And the other thing to add is that, you know, the people we spoke to did say, said very much, if there's something there to be done in January, they'll do it. You know, there is that recognition that it's not a great window, but at the same time, I think this window has also proved very tough, and they've come through it very well. So it's important that they leave themselves wriggle room for January, and they've done that.
Absolutely. So overall, chaps, how do we rate Newcastle's business in this window? Let's say marks out of 10. George, what do we think?
Oh, blimey. I mean, I think it's another excellent window. Marks out of 10. I mean, I think it's 8 or 9 for me. I mean, they haven't done everything that they could have done, but at the same time, they've shown that they can move around and they can be flexible and they can change when circumstances change. I think the important thing that they've brought in, there is that there's a lovely phrase that is being used at the club, which is called, it's not about sell on value, it's push on value, that they're bringing people in who can help push the club forward. I love that idea. So whether it's Bruno in January, whether it's Botman, whether it's Isak, there is that sense that they're buying in players who will have their best years at the club and will help the club develop and grow. And another thing that's been taking place that we haven't mentioned is that there's also been that move to bring in young players to help restock the club's academy so that they can start, you know, to pump prime that. So eventually Newcastle are producing their own players too. I think it's been an excellent window. So I'm going to give it 8 or 9.
Fair play. Chris, I have to agree with George. I would say it's been a very good window. There's been a few times when it's maybe looked like Newcastle's targets have been getting away from them, but with the signing of Isak at the end, I think it kind of pushes the overall score for the window up to maybe an 8, I would say. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm torn between a 7 and 8. I say that because...
So negative, Chris. So negative. What a negative note.
I'm looking at it back at the plan going into the window, and the idea at the start was to... A large part of it was to address Newcastle's attack. And the players they've signed, I think, are very, very good. And the fact that they've managed to get Isak in the end and spend a club record fee to get him when they didn't think he was attainable probably does push it up to an 8. But really, they wanted at least 2 attacking players, and they didn't quite do that. Obviously, the midfielder in the end, that was a change in tack throughout the window. So, and also Dubravka leaving when really it seems that Howe thinks now he's been left maybe goalkeeper short. I'm torn between a 7 and 8. I will go for an 8 in the end, but I do think, like any transfer window, there were positives and negatives about what Newcastle have been able to achieve. I think Isak pushes it up to, but I do think they are 1 attacking player short.
So then, chaps, with all this talk of transfers and windows, etc., we've taken our eye off the ball slightly, and there is actually a game of football to be played on Saturday with Crystal Palace coming to St James's Park. As far as injuries go, Chris, obviously we've been missing some key players recently. How are we looking with regards to Bruno Saint-Maximin et al?
Well, Bruno Guimaraes and Alan Saint-Maximin, Howe suggested that they might be involved tomorrow, but he was sort of, I don't think they will. I don't think either of them are going to be back for this game. I think it's probably next weekend. Callum Wilson, he says, is slightly behind those two, so I think you're talking another week or two probably for him. Alexander Isak, who did suffer that dead leg, Howe said he was very hopeful that he certainly hopes that he will be involved. So I think that hopefully he will make his home debut. And also Nick Pope, who seemed to suffer a bit of dizziness at Anfield, Howe says that he's fine and will be available. So yes, it's pretty much the squad who went to Anfield on Wednesday. That is the squad Newcastle have to choose from for the Palace game.
A lot of games in a short space of time, George, and obviously we worry about the injuries mounting up, and Patrick Vieira's got Palace playing some nice football as well. They're a decent team.
Yeah, and you know, from this point onwards, you look at the run of games Newcastle have, and they look pretty, you know, they look pretty inviting. If you then compare that to having, you know, City and Liverpool in the first batch of games, you would like a win at this point. I mean, A, because you just would, but also because I think another 3 points would be a fairer sort of reflection of Newcastle's start to the season, because although they drew against City, and they've had a couple of very good away draws, certainly in terms of, you know, picking up those points. They've not won a league match since the first day of the season. And I think, you know, I think a win over Palace would be more reflective of the way they've played. Then it's West Ham. That's a tricky away game. But home games against Bournemouth, Brentford, an away game at Fulham, there's a real chance, I think, to sort of cement this start to the season. As you say, it's been bruising. They look very tired at Anfield, I thought. But these games from this point are then won a week, and so that gives them a bit of time, hopefully a bit of time to get on the training pitch and recover. So it feels to me like a sort of tomorrow's the day for a deep breath and gritting the teeth and getting through it, hopefully getting a win, and then very much looking forward to them having some time and picking things up.
Right then, chaps, let's round things off. Remember, you can go to theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod for access to all of our great writing, as well as ad-free versions of the Athletic's podcast at just £1 per month for the first 6 months. So check out that offer now. The transfer window has closed. That's it. Newcastle have done their business until January, and a new club record signing is through the door. Alexander Isak starts off in great fashion with a goal at Anfield. Let's see what he can do against Crystal Palace at the weekend. Thanks a lot for joining me, George and Chris, as always. And thank you to you lot out there for listening. From everyone at Pod on the Tyne, we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye. To St James's Park.
Have we lost George again?
No, he's there. Back. He was just looking down.
Oh, sorry, he seemed to be frozen. Sorry. He seemed to be frozen. No,
I was very still.
It looked like one of them waxworks for a second. That was good. Yeah. So with all the transfer that is terrifying. Yeah. You done?
Yeah,
good. Okay.
The Athletic.